Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit a small town in Northeast Georgia that has suffered some hard times, but is finding ways to attract new interest and new investment. And we visit with a mayor who got involved in local government, at least in part because of family tradition, but he continues to serve to help bring his community back to its former glory. We're going to go talk with Mayor Lanier Rhodes in the small town of Union Point, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the city of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, I'm sitting in City Hall, but in the mayor's office of City Hall in the small town of Union Point, Georgia, and happen to be with the man who occupies this office, the mayor of Union Point, Georgia, Mayor Lanier Rhodes. Mayor Rhodes, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Welcome to you, Mr. Mayor, for coming to Union Point this morning.
Thank you so much. I told you when we came in and I started setting up, I said I've now done interviews for Greensboro and for Siloam, and now with Union Point, all three of the incorporated municipalities in Greene County, Georgia, will have a podcast episode on Small Town Podcast. So I'm glad we were able to do this.
Well, I thank you again for coming, and I'm glad to be with you this morning.
Yeah, well, we've already started talking. I'm sitting here. I had to tell him when I walked in his office, I'm a graduate of Georgia Tech, and his walls are red, and they are festooned with lots of UGA.
Well, I'm a Georgia.
That's
alum,
right.
We won't fight this morning.
No. We're all Georgia, state of Georgia boys here, and all about our small towns. So no, nothing except for there's one football game, and that's later in the year. Well, let's start. Like I said, I'm so excited to kind of learn about Union Point, but I'm really excited to kind of learn about your story. So I'll start with the same opening question I ask all my guests: were you born in Union Point, Georgia?
Yes, Mr. May, I was born in Union Point. Born and raised and have lived here all my life, except when I was in college. My first 2 years of college were at Truett McConnell College in Cleveland, Georgia.
Yeah.
Up in the mountains, I went there on a basketball scholarship. 2 years there, and then my last 2 years with at the University of Georgia.
I was about to say, I figure you ended up at UGA with all this on the walls.
I did. Very much so.
So before I talk about college, let me ask you, since you were born and raised here, talk about what it was like growing up in Union Point. What was life like?
It was just great. Everybody, and still to this day, everybody knows everyone, and everybody knows what the other person's doing, the business, and just everything. And it's still that way now. Of course, there's a lot of changes that have been made here. And I've been in business here in Union Point for 47 years. Road Sports Corner and General Store is my business. And I'm still open, but since COVID has come on us, I have been going in and out. So I'm not keeping any regular hours at this time. But I'm not officially closed at this time.
Right. Depending on what official and unofficial means in this era of COVID, we have to things change daily.
That's right. Well, so people know me, and they have my phone number, and they can call me if they need something.
So if it's closed but someone needs it to be open, you're okay with coming
down?
Sir.
Yes, sir. I'll come down to make the sale.
That's how small-town business works, doesn't
it? That's exactly right.
Well, let me ask you this. So college, Truett McConnell, and then UGA, what did you get a degree in?
It was in education.
Okay.
It was in education. And I would like to expand on this just a little bit, because I love to tell this story about University of Georgia. I own an apartment in Athens. I've had it for years, and we bought it to let our children, our grandchildren, and all have a place to be in Athens when they were there. Well, our son, Trey Rhodes, is, of course, is our state representative at this time. Trey went to Florida on a baseball scholarship.
Were you okay with that?
Well, not really.
Big UGA fan.
But not really. When you didn't have to pay the money,
well,
it
okay,
helps.
Yeah, that helps.
So he played for a couple of years down there, and one morning he called me. He said, "Daddy, I am ready to come back home and get on my life." Of course, he had aspirations of wanting to be a professional baseball player. And Trey was a mighty fine athlete, but he did not have that dynamic arm. He had everything else, but the arm was not quite there to be in the professional levels. So here he goes to University of Georgia. And while he was there, he became best friends with Coach Kirby Smart.
Mm-hmm.
He and Trey are best of friends today. They live together in the apartment that I own in Athens. So that went on. Kirby came in as grad assistant under Coach Mark Richt. After that ceased, they both went their ways, and then Kirby came back to Georgia. And by that time, my youngest son had gotten up there, and he lived with him for a year. So that I love to tell that story about Coach Kirby.
So you got good connections with the coaching staff at UGA.
We do, and we appreciate that. We love Kirby and Mary Beth. They just like our children.
So if you went into education, now you've got a business, but what did you do after college? And actually, let me ask this. I ask this a lot. I love asking this question. See, everybody's got different answers. When you went off to Truett McConnell and then you went to UGA, that's not too far from Union Point.
No.
But was
40
there,
miles.
Was there ever any thought to, you know, as a young man, you go off to school and you think, all right, now I'm going to go live my life somewhere else. I'll come home for holidays. But was there
no.
any thought of
oh,
that?
Oh, no. That was never
always
something for me. I planned to come back home. And let me tell you, the first year, I had three jobs. I taught school during the day. Well, first of all, I drove a school bus.
Okay.
First thing in the morning.
You drove your own students to school.
Some of them. I drove a school bus, county school bus, and then I taught school. Well, before all of that even started, I had a turkey house.
Okay.
I raised 5,000 turkeys, and I had to work the turkey houses at 4 o'clock, come home, take a bath, get on the school bus, drive the school bus, go to school.
Right.
Then go back to the turkey house. So my day was very full.
So it was turkeys, school bus with children, classroom with children, school bus with children, turkeys.
That's right. That was right.
Kind of sandwich.
5,000 turkeys.
Good gracious.
So my day was very full.
You just can't stand to sit idle, can you?
No. Then after I was midway through the school year, I was teaching here in Union Point.
Mm-hmm.
I got drafted. And I got drafted in 1969. 69. And my superintendent got me a postponement until the end of the school year.
So you could finish out.
So I finished the school year, and then I went in and I served for 2 years. This was during the Vietnam War. I was stationed in Fort Ord, California.
Mm-hmm.
And my name, by the good Lord, I was on levy for 1 year for Vietnam, but my number never came up. So after that, I came back and I started. That is when I came back. When I first got back home, we had a mobile home trailer park. Actually, they built the mobile homes, and I applied for a job there and got the job. But what they did is they were going to put me in the sales department. But to be able to sell the product, I had to work in the plant.
You had to know it inside and out.
I had to know what I was selling.
Yeah.
So I worked for months inside the plant in each department, and then they put me in sales. Well, this went on for a year or so, and they closed the plant in Union Point and were moving to Ohio and wanted me to go to Ohio. But this Union Point boy wasn't going though.
Well, if you went off to college knowing you were coming back to Union Point, yeah, I was going to guess you probably weren't going to Ohio.
No, sir. So that's when I started and I went into business for myself.
So you didn't go back to teaching at all after
no,
you came back from the Army?
And I've been in business here for 47 years. And my dad at one time was the oldest businessman on the street. He was a pharmacist, Rhodes Drugstore. And I'd always worked with the public and in the public. So I always appreciated the public. I worked behind the soda fountain
mm-hmm.
ever since I was tall enough to see over the fountain. We had an old-fashioned.
Which if you were playing basketball and you're a tall man, that was probably earlier
well,
on.
I'm 6'2", and that was pretty tall years ago. Of course, it's not now. The guards are taller than that, but I played forward, mm-hmm. you know, and that was nice average height at that time.
You didn't go back to school teaching. I imagine that means you also didn't drive the school bus anymore. What about the turkeys?
Got out the turkey. Well, I'll tell you the story
you
on
that. You changed your life when you
I have
back.
A story on the turkeys.
Okay.
Too. My dad, here in Union Point, you know, we don't get that many snows in a year, but the year that I left to go in to the service, we had 12 inches of snow.
Goodness.
They sent me a picture of the picnic table in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, his name was Ralph Rhodes, he had a yardstick, and it was 12 inches of snow.
Wow.
Well, what happened? With that snow, my turkey house collapsed.
Oh, no.
So that put me out of the turkey business. It just went.
So like that one wasn't so much by choice, just by calamity.
The good Lord. Nature. That's
didn't,
right.
Didn't want to rebuild the turkey house for the 5,000 turkeys after that.
That's right.
But went into business for yourself and been in that same business ever since.
I have always been independent in that area and like being in business and being pretty much my own boss.
Yeah. There's definitely advantages to that. It means you got all the same responsibilities as your own boss, too, so there's a trade-off there.
A lot more pressure.
Yeah.
If you're not there, it doesn't get done.
Payroll's your responsibility.
That's exactly right. It sure is.
Well, at some point along the way here, you went off in the Army for a couple of years, came back, had some career changes, but at some point you obviously got involved in local government. Otherwise, I wouldn't have announced you as being the mayor today. So at what point did that start? Because you alluded to kind of a lengthy career kind of in and out over the years.
Well, Mr. Mayor, it's in the blood. My going back, I wish I had everyone, but my uncles, my granddaddy, my daddy, everybody has been mayor of Union Point, and it was just something that I felt like I needed to do. I love the citizens of Union Point. I try to do things that are best for the majority of the people. I know when you're in politics and government, you can't please everybody. But as my daddy told me years ago when I first ran for city council in Union Point, he said, son, when something comes up, what you do is you don't make any snap, quick decisions. You pray about it first, and then you do what is best for the majority of the people, because you can't please everybody, but the main thing is do what's best for the majority of the people.
So at what point, well, actually I should ask this, since you just kind of described it as almost a family tradition, kind of in the blood, was that something you just kind of always, I don't know, maybe you assumed you would be involved at some point? You knew when you were in college you were coming home. You went off 2 years in the Army, you knew you were coming home. So was there kind of always the thought, maybe in the back of your mind, that you'd at some point get on council or be the mayor?
Well, yes, there was no doubt. Me living here and wanting to have something to do with the town and everything. And it was never a doubt that, of course, now the mayor part, I think someone needs to serve on the council prior to running, because I'm still learning today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've been in politics for 38 to 40 years total, mm-hmm, between being on the city council and being mayor as probably 12 to 14 of those years. But no one knows it all. I don't care who they are. And you know, I'm speaking to you as a mayor from your city. You learn every day.
That's right.
So it's a learning process. And anybody thinks they know it all, they don't. That's for sure.
There's some people that do think that.
That's right.
So what was it that, so when you first got in, I think you told me you ran for a council seat first.
Yes.
How old were you when you first ran?
Oh, me, Matt.
You said it was so many years, you couldn't remember which year, yeah, how old you were. Nobody hold that against you.
I'm a seasoned person now. I'm not going to say my age, but
nope, not gonna ask.
If you go back 40 years, I was on the council probably, back then, our elections, they were for a two-year term.
Okay. Yep. A lot of people were too, and they've all switched to four over the years.
But now we're on a four-year term.
Now, does Union Point have at-large council members or districts?
Yes. At large.
At large. Okay.
And we don't have, it's not any staggered.
Okay. So they can all turn over at the same time?
They can all turn over.
Wow.
At one time.
How many council seats are there?
We have 6 council seats and the mayor.
And then the mayor. Okay.
And our form of government is I am a weak male. And I hate to say that.
No. I was going to correct it just to make sure everyone thought. That doesn't mean you're a weak man.
Right.
It's just a form of government. That's what it's called. We've talked about that before. Some people get offended if you tell them they're a weak mayor. And right. It's nothing personal.
But for people that are listening, for those that don't know what it is, it means I do not vote unless it's a tie.
Right. Now, do you have a city manager?
We have a city clerk / treasurer.
Okay.
And her name is Becky Chronic. Mm-hmm. She has been with us. I want to plug Becky. She was a godsend to us. We had a lot of issues going on when I came back in this past term, which I'm now in an election year. Becky's been with us about 3 years. She came in having to learn. She is still being trained. She's just a few hours from having her full clerk, mm-hmm, certification. She has really been a troop. She has a personality pretty much like me. She wants so-so.
Yeah.
We get along great. And I have a real good council now. And to say that, I think a council member or any person that serves has to have their own views, come to the meetings with an open mind, study before you come to the meetings, and be prepared to vote. And our council has been very efficient in that way.
Let me go back to the beginning. It sounds like that the answer may be you just knew that you wanted to serve in the capacity of a council member. But was when you initially decided to run those many years ago, was there something specific you wanted to accomplish, or maybe a certain department or initiative you wanted to focus on, or just kind of was it just general community service?
Well, at that time when I first started, you know, like I say, I was much younger, and basically it was wanting to serve our town and our city. But can I say a few things that we have accomplished now and things that we're working on? Union Point, the main customer or person that we had, Union Point was known for the hosiery mill. The Union Manufacturing Company employed about 700 people. Well, the thing that happened to it just happened all over America with those businesses and plants closing down. It closed in 2001. That was half of Union Point's customer base. We have water, sewerage, and gas, which a lot of cities cannot offer those services and utilities for the size that we are. But when they closed, that was 50% of our customer base. They used 50% of the water and the gas and the sewerage. So that has been a blow that has really struck us, all of us, because if you lived in this area, I'm going to say Greene County,
mm-hmm.
as a whole, you either had an aunt or an uncle or a cousin, a mother, a daddy, or somebody worked in that.
You were connected to somebody that worked there. So let me ask this to give kind of the scope. You said that was 700 jobs at that one place. What's the population of Union Point, roughly? Or maybe it's even changed a little bit over the...
No, we have not lost a population, thank goodness. We're still around 1,700.
So for population 1,700 and 700 jobs in that one spot, that means you were drawing in jobs. People were coming here.
Yes.
And that means they were spending money on lunch and gas and things like that. So your commercial economic development was a lot dependent on the people that brought in.
Very much. As I can say, and it's small town America, it's not just Union Point. As I've said, I've been on the in the business section, and it's sad. Every building on our block uptown, and you need to ride by there before you leave today and see, was occupied. We had two banks in Union Point. We had three mom and pop grocery stores. We had two drug stores. We had, like I say, every building had a thriving business on the street. And I can see it changing a little bit now. People are starting to come back into Union Point more. We've got some businesses. This week alone, the mill that I just talked about, Union Manufacturing, sold for $1.5 million.
Wow.
That is so encouraging. And I have met with the new owner of that. His name is Marty McClure. I don't mind saying his name. Fine man. We've had other people come and want to do things and tried to do things, but I think this man has the backing to do what he is planning on doing.
Good.
At this time. So we are all excited about that. We've just had another plant to open on our Industrial Boulevard, ARC, and what they do, they have a direct line of communication with Amazon.
Okay. I've heard of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And what they do, Mr. Mayo, is they take in products that have been sent back to Amazon for whatever reason. Sometimes I've been up there several times and talked with the superintendent up there. Sometimes people get it and just don't like it.
Yeah.
But they send it back. And all of these products come right here to Union Point. They are checked, reconditioned, rebuilt to whatever is needed.
Okay.
And then they are shipped back.
Wow.
And then they are sold, of course, at a lesser value than they would have been.
But it's something that's value still created by the essentially
and,
the reconstruction.
And what's really encouraging is by the end of this year, well, they've got about 65 employees right now. And by the end of this year, Billy has told me that he plans to have 100. End of next year, he had plans to have 200.
Okay.
So those folks have got to have a place to eat.
Yep.
And sleep. And that's why we're so encouraged.
you've already said it's not just Union Point, it's small towns all over America, not even just Georgia.
I'm sure you see that in ourselves.
We've got plants in that same time frame. You said 2001, so late 90s into the end of the 2000s, there was this trend of, well, we can get cheaper labor offshore. So lots of jobs, and you're not the first person. I know you won't be surprised to hear this. You're not the first person to talk about a large plant that was a large employer.
Oh, yeah.
If a 700-employee plant closes down, you don't just go recruit another one with the same jobs. But we're starting to see this nice comeback to it. People are looking at rural America. I think people are looking at rural America and small towns even more because of the pandemic and because of the resiliency of small towns and our ability to kind of weather those kinds of storms. And so if you got somebody that's going to have 100 jobs, 200 jobs, we'll eventually get back. And actually, it'll probably make more sense because instead of relying so much on one plant with 700, let's have seven plants with 100. And there's a little more stability there.
The trend across the country now is you don't have a lot of plants unless you get a caterpillar or something that. Most of your businesses now will employ 10 to 100 folks.
But if you work on recruiting those, it's actually more stable for your economy anyway, because losing one company isn't so detrimental to utilities and the economy and the commercial businesses that surround and support it.
That's right. And on our industrial boulevard, every building up there is occupied.
Yeah,
So that's encouraging and exciting for our community and our town.
And then I know it's a ripple effect, and sometimes it takes those ripples a little while to reach the next stage, but you've got some buildings in your commercial district that will probably be more likely to be bought and put businesses in because of those industrial sites that are full now. So that's a good thing.
And another thing for our town of Union Point, I don't like to refer to it as a small town because it's home. We take pride in it being the size.
Nothing wrong with it being
is.
A small town. That's right.
That's right. I mean, that's appealing.
Those are the ones I prefer.
That's exactly right. But an example on that, the trend turning, as I say, a home in Union Point 3 years ago that went on the market for sale, liable to still be on the market in those times. But a house in Union Point now. Well, across the street from where I live, a lady moved here about 4 or 5 months ago, and she saw the opportunity to flip her house with the way things were selling in Union Point. Her house stayed on the market 3 days.
Wow.
And she is having to move out now.
Yeah.
And she told me what, I'm not going to say any numbers, but she told me what she was doing. And if it sold, great. And if not, she's happy in Union Point.
Yeah.
But she's, I don't know where she's going to go now. I think she's going to try to go back to the mountains. She moved here from up around Cleveland or somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
That just gives you an example of...
Things are happening.
Things are happening.
People, you're in demand, Mayor.
Yeah. And this man that bought the mill, I met with him the other day. Jill and myself met with him. That's my wife. And we've told him one of the main needs that we needed in our city. Now, we have some restaurants, but we needed another restaurant in our town. Well, he came up on and looked at some buildings on the street. He bought a building the other day, and he plans to put a restaurant in that building.
Well, that's exciting.
It sure is.
Yeah, well, that's good. That ripple effect's already happening.
That's right.
Let me go back and ask, because we talked about, you know, general service and kind of in your blood and everything, but you got on council. But like I said, I've introduced you as the mayor, so obviously we've changed seats a little bit here and there. And you actually mentioned kind of being... not continuous service. So I'm curious to kind of get back to your story. How long were you on council? You said it was 2-year term, so you probably ran a few times. But how long were you on council before you ended up in the mayor's chair?
Well, as I said, we were on 2-year terms back then, and now we're on 4-year terms.
Mm-hmm.
So you were constantly, anybody's constantly politicking. I'm not going to say that. But
I always argue that if you're doing the job, then you shouldn't have to worry about the campaign. You are campaigning by doing the job, and you probably were that way.
Exactly.
Too. Yep.
Exactly. But I was on the council probably 18 to 20 years before I became. And at that time, the mayor that we had, he was a good mayor. He had been mayor for a long time, and he had aspirations of running for another position,
mm-hmm.
and he had to step down. Well, I became mayor for that, the rest of that term.
So you were the mayor pro tem at the time.
I've been mayor pro tem for many times.
Okay.
Many times.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that used to be done is not exactly held now, but, and it was not a something set in stone, but as a courtesy, what we used to do when you had an election, of course, you had the election for the mayor and then for the council. And what was usually termed was the high vote getter, the person that got the most votes.
Oh, because it was all at large. I got it.
On the council, they were usually offered the mayor pro tem seat.
Okay.
Because that I felt like that was the people were speaking
sure.
as who they would, if something, God forbid, happened to the mayor,
mm-hmm.
that would be your next mayor.
Okay.
But anyway, I was mayor pro tem several times. But I'm not saying that in a braggingly way.
No.
But that's just how
the system. Yeah.
That's just how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to run for mayor.
So you finished out the rest of that term, or just for a short time after
right.
the acting mayor?
And I ran.
And then ran, and probably that was a special election.
It was. And then I ran against when the mayor did not win the seat that he ran for.
Uh-huh.
He in turn came back and ran again. And I lost, and I ran against him, and I lost by 4 votes.
So he wanted his old job back when
he wanted his old job back, and he got it.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I was out. Well, then I.
Because, you couldn't run for council and mayor. So it was once you didn't win that, you were off the council.
Right.
Okay.
But then I got back on the council.
Okay.
And then I ran for mayor and won that seat. And I have been mayor. Let's see the years. I did not seek re-election in 2013. I was mayor for the 4 years
mm-hmm.
running through 2013.
Okay.
I did not seek re-election then.
You'd had enough.
I felt like I had served my time.
Right.
Some folks say your sentence.
Yep.
But I don't look at it like a sentence. And then I got talked back into running after the former administration, and I won. I ran against the current mayor at that time.
So you had to defeat the incumbent to get your current.
I had to defeat the incumbent.
And that was 4 years ago.
That was 4 years ago. And now, of course, as you said yourself, you're in
That's right. It's an election year for a lot of us.
It is. We got to make a lot of choices.
That's right. All right, Mayor, I want to talk some more about Union Point and some of the things going on and what you've seen over your years of service. But I want to pause right here and do a segment I call the Get to Know You questions. It's just got 4 questions to help us get to know you a little better. Maybe people that think they know you, they'll learn something new. So first question of the 4, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
I do.
He declared.
I have some people in town used to call my daddy Pie.
Pie?
Pie, P-I-E.
Okay.
And different ones in Union Point call me Cake.
How did he get the nickname Pie?
I have no idea.
I guess Cake is just a derivative of pie. So, well, we'll just go with a different dessert.
That's exactly what. And I'm so sad.
Cake, son of Pie.
Right. Okay. Right. And I have one friend. My full name is Ralph Lanier Rhodes Jr. My daddy was Ralph Sr. And I have a son that is a third, and I have a grandson that is a 4th.
Okay. Carrying on the tradition.
That's right. So that. The pie and the cake,
since there's a third and a 4th, is there like a cupcake and a
no? I don't think like that. No, we don't go. Hadn't
didn't
done
go that,
that
far.
Yet.
It stopped at cake. Okay,
but my dad, as I said, it was Ralph, and his brother was W.H. Rhodes, and they were in the drugstore together and many other businesses that they did together. They had a wood business. They had an appliance business. They had real estate and all that, but everything was 50-50. They called my daddy Pie, and his brother they called Foots.
Foots?
And I can tell you why they called him Foots. He had a big feet.
Okay.
And he wore a size 12 shoe, and back then that was larger.
I think that's large now.
And like me, I wear 13, but they call me Cake.
So you don't know why your dad got the nickname Pie.
I have no idea.
Because he was Pie.
And his brother, people in the community, and his brother was also mayor of Union Point.
Okay, okay. More family tradition there.
That's
all right. Cake. All right. That's an interesting nickname. All right. So next question.
But I do love cake.
Too. Well, that
and
adds
pie.
To it. That, you could go either way.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Next question. What would be your go-to karaoke song? Actually, you know, you said this, and I didn't ask. We were talking about high school days and college days. You said you were in a band.
Oh yeah.
So you didn't do karaoke. You did live. You did live music while playing. What instrument did you play? I don't think you asked.
I was a lead singer.
Okay.
And
okay.
I played rhythm guitar. Some.
Okay.
But we were, of course, when the Beatles came out, you know, everybody wanted to make money and be like the Beatles.
That's right.
And do things like.
Did you do Beatles cover tunes?
We did some Beatles, okay. But it was mostly 60s and 70s. And I like to tell this story. There was four of us in the band when we started. And we had aspirations of making it real big.
Sure. You're going to open for the Beatles.
That's right. So we didn't have the proper equipment. So we talked it up, and all of our dads went and signed a note at the bank, at the local bank here, wow. Bank of Union Point,
okay.
Which we don't have now. We borrowed over $5,000, which was probably more like $25,000 or $30,000.
That's
now.
That's a good chunk of change.
It was. We started playing and doing dances, and we paid that note off in a year.
Okay, good.
And then...
I'm sure all your dads were happy with that, too.
Yes, sir. They were. But that was the band started, and we played and did this for years. We played at colleges for fraternity
parties. What was the name of your band?
The Freedom Suite.
The Freedom Suite.
That's right.
Is it because your name was Cake and he had Sweet?
But now... The first name was the Signified Children.
So you had two different band names. You went from
right.
Signified Children to the Freedom,
to the Freedom
Suite.
Suite. Right.
Why the change?
Well, just do something different.
So I don't like that name anymore. I want another name.
I guess we didn't want to be called children.
There you go.
We got older.
So for the karaoke song, which I guess maybe just tell us your favorite. What was one of your favorite songs to play cover in when you were the
Mustang Sally.
Mustang Sally. That's great.
You probably don't even know.
Oh, yeah. No, I know Mustang Sally. And I can't wait.
Mustang Sally.
There he goes. I didn't even need to cue it up.
All you got to do is ride around, Sally. Ride, Sally, ride. You weren't looking for that, were you?
I wasn't. You're not the first person, but you're still one of the few that went ahead and jumped in and sang the karaoke song when I asked the question. That was great. All right, next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Steak.
Okay.
Ribeye steak or filet.
All right.
Baked potato and salad.
All right. How you want your steak cooked? What dressing for your salad?
I want my steak medium well, and I like blue cheese or either ranch dressing.
All right. Mix it up. Blue cheese, ranch, just depending on the day.
No, either one will be up.
All right, all right. All right, final question. This is another music question. It's perfect. So if you could attend any concert of any singer, band, duo, any performer, any group of any kind, either now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
The Beatles.
That makes sense. You wanted to be the Beatles.
That's right.
All right. Well, Mayor Lanier, thanks for letting us get to know you.
Thank you for coming.
Now, in bigger cities, they often have a large staff to handle all aspects of government operations and for any new projects or initiatives. In small towns, not only does the mayor have to stay actively engaged in daily operations, other members of the council step in to help out as well. In Union Point, we got to talk with a member of the council who currently serves as the mayor pro tem and hear about a project he has brought to Union Point, the Firefly Trail.
My name is James Morgan Scott. And my nickname is, one of them, is Jimmy. And because some of my family was connected with the Chipman Union textile mill, and we made hosiery, socks, my main nickname is Sock Man.
Sock Man.
Sock Man. S-O-C-K-M-A-N.
Well, talk about how long you've been serving, because I know you've had a long time of service in this community.
Yeah, I can't remember the year I first ran, but I had a very close friend named Ben Stewart, whose family was connected with the Farmers Bank here, and he was serving as mayor. I decided I wanted to follow my father's footsteps and get into politics, and he actually defeated my father over the subject of putting your leaves in bags for the city to pick up, or just putting them in the ditch and the city would buy a leaf removal machine. And he defeated my father in that election. There was no hard feelings.
But that was the hot button issue in Union Point then, huh? Which I just, because I can't help it, which side of the issue was your father on?
He was on bagging them.
He wanted the folks to bag it, and the people wanted to just throw it.
And they didn't like it.
So they voted for the man that would not make them do the extra step.
So the political race was over bagging or not bagging leaves.
Small town issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I served with Ben probably either one or two terms. He was a very good mayor. He had some financial issues, and he chose to, unfortunately, take his life.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And, but he's very well remembered as being a good mayor, and I think Lanier would agree with me on that.
Yeah. Well, how long did you serve on council? You're still serving today, but I think there was a little bit of break in service there.
I took probably a 10 to 12 year absence. The whole time I was absent, Lanier was the mayor of Union Point, but I never served with him until this last term.
And okay.
We're going on our fourth year now, and this is election year, and I was even more close to him than I was to Ben because we're the same age.
Yeah.
And I grew up right next door to Lanier. So we did everything from first grade all the way to college together.
And now you're serving in the city government together.
Well, I thought it would be an honor to be able to serve with him because he has a lot more years than I do.
Yeah.
We agreed to be try for re-election. He's unopposed this year. I'm not, but I feel pretty good about it. And it's just been an honor to serve with him. And all his years of serving previous to this was it's showing very well. He does an excellent job.
Now, you said you took a 12-year absence. How many years did you serve before?
It's a good question.
Can't remember. a long time sounds like the answer.
When you get my age, it's hard to remember your name, much less.
Well, I found something very interesting. You said you and Lanier are the same age. How old are you?
Well, I'm 73, and I was born in July the 21st, and he's 73, and he was born June 11th.
And so my podcast is kind of about breaking stereotypes. People have certain images in their head about small towns, and we're showing about how great they are, and people maybe be overlooking them, and they'll give them a second look now. So people may have an idea in their heads that two men, 73 years old, probably just want to keep things the same and not do any development. But you guys have a few things going on here. So let's talk about some of those things. You said, you said you're an avid cyclist, so you're still very active at 73. So talk about the trail, the passion you took from that and developing something here in Union Point.
Well, I have always enjoyed bicycling. When I got out of the University of Georgia in 72, which took me 6 years to graduate, I bought a little piece of property out in the country. It was just basically to get there was by dirt roads. And so I chose to get into mountain biking with the big knobby tires. And I have done both, but I prefer mountain biking. Then I was working at the mill. And of course, Lanier's family is a very, very well-known family. And his daddy had one of these unique drugstores downtown and still had the soda fountain there. Mm-hmm. So every afternoon we'd go down and get a milkshake or an ice cream, and then we'd go do our things and plan. Lanier chose to be a jogger rather than ride mountain bikes. And I jogged too. I ran a couple of marathons, but I think that's what caused both hips and my knee have been replaced. And Dr. Rose, who was Lanier's cousin, was always told me he hated running. He was one of those family practitioners that did not like running. So he said, when you get about 63 or 64, you're going to start having a joint replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So 64 and a half, the left hip went out.
He predicted well, huh?
Yeah. And he said, you better stick to bicycling. So after I really, really got involved in mountain biking, I travel a lot and ride different courses all over. And I'm not in races or anything. I just do it for survival.
Just for fun.
Yeah. The Five Fly Trail, I think, had their first local action committee probably 15 to 16 years ago. And I wasn't in on that meeting. But in my bicycling, I would go down to visit my brother in Florida. And there's a trail from St. Petersburg up past Tarpon Spring. And we're talking about Pinellas County, Florida. And the trail is called the Pinellas Trail. And it goes through from St. Pete, it goes to Clearwater and all of that. And it's an old abandoned railroad line. And the thing that struck me was it went right through the old towns and the stores and the shops and restaurants that just sprung up along that trail. And this was probably 10 years ago when I made the first trip. But the most amazing thing was they had several schools that were physically next door to the Pinellas Trail. And one of them that stuck out in my mind was like, I think it's called Ozona Elementary School. And of the 800 elementary students, something like 400 of them rode their bikes.
Wow.
Parked in a secure parking lot, attended school, and came back home. So when I heard about the Firefly Trail, that the first thing that came to my mind, we could do something with this school up here. I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, but now I think I might be able to ride it in my lifetime. And so that was one thing that I have been trying to reinforce the importance of this Firefly Trail. If you read the success stories of all these rails to trails, all of them are positive.
Yeah.
I don't know of any of them that have shut back down.
Right.
So,
well, it's pretty hard to keep it open. You just make sure people can ride their bikes and run on it. So we'll talk about what this trail is, where it starts, where it goes to. Give us, for somebody who's never heard of the Firefly Trail, give me a description.
I'm going to wander a little bit and tell you something else that was interesting. But I had one grandfather that lived on one side of me that was connected with the Hoosier Mill. That was my father's father. On the other side was my mother's father and mother. And he was a conductor on the Georgia Railroad. And when we grew up, there were like 8 or 9 passenger trains a day coming from Atlanta to Augusta. But it used to be, before you could get to Atlanta from Augusta, you came to Union Point, and Georgia Railroad put in a line, like in 1840, that connected Union Point to Athens. And then you got on another passenger train and went from Athens to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure when, but they decided that it was more economical to connect Atlanta and Augusta in a direct railroad line. And so that's what they did. When the last piece of track was laid here, the railroad crews said, well, this is the Union Point. And so the city officials adopted that name, and we went from Thornton's Crossroads to Union Point. And so my grandfather, that was on a conductor on the railroad, when he retired, Georgia Railroad still had, or CXX, still had the branch to Athens. So they hired him to be the cabooseman, if that's the proper term. But they had to have a human being in the caboose.
Yeah.
And it might not be but 4 or 5 cars, but that was a caboose. And I'm probably 2 football lengths from the railroad track.
Where you live?
Which was at Joe. So in my college days, which I mentioned the length that it took me, on a Friday afternoon, I could go to the Classic Center and give my grandfather my dirty clothes. And he would bring them home and take them to my mom, and she'd wash them, and I'd get them back like on Monday.
You relied on that train for more than just your own personal transportation then.
And then one time he, against the rules, he let me ride in the caboose, you know, from Union Point to Athens. So, but then they started taking up the tracks like in 1984 and stuff like that. So it was just kind of forgotten about until this thing, Firefly Plans, came along. We're all excited about it. We've got our model mile in. Max's has got theirs. And Athens is all the way from the Classic Center to the Oglethorpe County line. So the slowest part is going to be Oglethorpe because we go through all farmlands.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those guys were given that property back, and they moved the fences. There have been some dwellings built. So there are going to be some logistics we got to work out.
Sure.
But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm convinced it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
said the piece of it that's here, that starts here, is already finished. So how far out can you go if I start and get on a bicycle right here in Union Point?
Here?
Yeah.
You start where there's a spur line that CSX Railroad has not abandoned yet.
Okay.
0.2 mile.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from where Rose Street and Carlton Avenue intersect. And when I was growing up, it was one of those old wooden underpasses. that was only big enough for cars to go through. School bus couldn't go through. Big box trucks couldn't go through. They tore that down probably 20 or 30 years ago, the railroad bridge. And so until we get the grant money to build another elevated bridge, the terminus is at Rose Street and Carlton Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a grant to bring it all the way up to where the line physically attaches to the Atlanta Augusta branch.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous old set of stone steps up there, and that's what we call our GPS marker, the stone steps. And so we hope to bring it another 0.2 mile, which will give it exactly 1 mile.
Okay.
So it'll be 1 mile.
So it's just shy of that 1 mile now.
Well, we can ride 0.7 of it right now because we don't have the bridge yet.
Right.
I try to ride it every day. You know, I do a lot of riding out in the country, dirt roads, because I'm a mountain biker.
Yeah.
And I cut through behind the school, and I try to do that last section and observe and see if there's any trash or anything on, if the grass needs cutting and stuff like that. So I'm all excited about it.
What does that mean as far, are you already starting to see some people kind of come and get excited about the fact there's a trail? I know it's only a mile,
yeah.
So it's not a lengthy trail for you to come and do a long thing, but is it already kind of attracting some attention?
Well, we had maybe 3 vacant buildings in Union Point that were right on the verge of having to be torn down.
Yeah.
And some outside people have seen what the Firefly Trail has done to other towns.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have purchased those buildings.
Wow.
And one of them is in the process of structurally making it sound again.
Yeah.
And we've heard everything from putting a store downstairs to apartments upstairs.
Sure.
And just don't know for sure.
But you've got outside investors that yeah. came in and bought buildings that probably would have just gone away. And they're fixing them up just because there's, right now, not even a mile.
That's right.
Because it's showing the potential, I guess.
One of the unfortunate things we did, and I think Lanier's father, maybe my father were on the council, when CSX decided to abandon that railroad, they gave City of Union Point an option to buy the depot.
Mm.
I think I heard for $1.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't seem possible, so they didn't do it, so the railroad tore it down.
I've heard similar stories.
But as you go up, the next town is Woodville.
Yeah.
That depot is still there.
Yeah.
The next town is Max's, and they have that Model Mile in. That depot has already been purchased by somebody. And then you go up to Crawford, and that depot was being remodeled.
Yeah. So you're saying you wish you had your depot, don't you?
Yeah. It was right in the Y, where Athens Branch, and it served both railroads.
So let this be a lesson. If anyone's listening and your town is about to sell an old depot or any other historic building because you think it's going to be too much to keep it up.
That was a pastime for us. Like Lanier and I, we would put pennies on the track. And then the most amazing thing was the way they communicated. At the old depot, there was something almost like the speaker thing. And they had a piece of very fragile wire that went from here to here to the bottom, and it had instructions for the engineer of the locomotive to read. So he'd come down through that 30, 45 miles an hour, he'd have his arm out the window, and it had to be just at the right height. So when he went through that string, the string broke, and he had the instructions on a piece of paper, handwritten, and they read it going down the shaft. I remember that. I said, gosh, if he ever messes up. And so we would watch the train. So many of them came through here, so that was a major pastime for us.
Yeah, yeah. So you're able to kind of take some nostalgia from when the trains came through on the tracks, and now you've got something new about it. And not ironic, I guess, that you used to use those tracks for pennies and watching the guys come and get their instructions, and now you're actually riding the same trail on your bike. Well, I hope that the completion comes quick on the Firefly Trail, and you get the ride from start to finish. Because, as if I remember correctly, now we said it doesn't go from Athens to Union Point; it goes from Union Point to Athens. Isn't that what we say?
That's right. Got to stick with the map.
That's right. That's right. Well, Mr. Jimmy, thanks for talking with us and tell us about the Firefly Trail and all the great things happening to Union Point because of it.
Okay.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics, helping small town business thrive.
All right, I want to talk more about Union Point and some of the things you've seen over the years. And as we were setting up, you were talking about, and you've already talked about on the recording, about some of these economic development, people buying sites and building and buying old buildings. And so we got some job creation and things coming back. But you even mentioned, and I told you when you said, well, we don't have to talk about that. I said, no, dilapidated infrastructure is such a common challenge. But it sounds like you guys have been making great strides on some of that here in the city. So talk about that, about some of the things you've done, either when you were on council or as mayor, either of the times.
Well, yes, and that's something I'm very proud of, that former mayors, city council members, whoever was serving at the time, I was on most all of those times, but we had pipes throughout the city that were old. Yeah. And the
you're not the only one.
The old galvanized metal type pipes that corrode and close, and you lose water pressure and you don't have quality water. We did it in phases, but we had it in three phases. The worst section of towns where we, and I caught a lot of grief for this when it was being done. A lot of people couldn't understand. You had to dig up and tab some of the roads things better.
That's where the pipes are.
but what we've done when we did that, of course, when Union Point was first Union Point, of course, going back, Union Point used to be Thornton's Crossroads years ago. That was the first name, Union Point. And it was later changed to Union Point because it was the main point between Atlanta and Augusta.
Okay. It was the Union.
And it was the Athens branch came through here. And I can remember as a little boy, they would take on coal and water here, the steam engines. So that's really how it got to be Union Point. But getting back to the pipes in the ground, we replaced all of the pipes. And where we had like 2-inch pipes, that was a problem. And we replaced the main pipes with like 6-inch pipes all throughout town. And not only that, but as far as the infrastructure, we have rebuilt a new sewer plant here in Union Point. That was like a $4 million project. And now we're in the middle of, right now, building a new water treatment facility. We use surface water in Union Point. We used to use wells. We had like 6 to 8 wells around town, but the wells were starting to dry up. So that was the reason that we went to surface water. And we have loads of surface water. And we're real proud of right now building our new $5.5 million water treatment facility.
And you've got two different aspects that have kind of come together. You mentioned earlier your number one customer, kind of half of your volume as far as water, sewer, and natural gas was that one plant with 700 employees.
Exactly right.
And while you wouldn't have wished to do away, it sounds like it went away. And instead of just saying, oh, well, I guess I won't come back, the city, and certainly this is a tribute to your leadership, but I'm sure there are other people involved that should get some credit too.
Exactly right. You can't do it by yourself.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's got to be a team sport. But you made improvements, and now things are building back. And so good thing those investments were made. Otherwise, you would not be in a position to have industry come back in, even smaller than that.
I'd like to just mention this. Yes. You're exactly right there, Mr. Mayor. But one thing that we did, too, in the last few years, I-20 is approximately 6 miles from here. Mm-hmm. And at that time, 6 to 8 years ago, Flying J Truck Stop was wanting to move into this area. But they needed water, sewer, and gas.
Yeah.
And heating gas, not...
right. Not car fuel.
But
yeah, natural.
So Union Point ran the lines out there. So we have water and sewer.
So you got a 6 mile extension on all three of your... 6 mile
extension all the way to I-20 and Flying J truck stop is a customer.
I'm sure that's a good big customer.
That is.
And I'm willing to bet that you picked up a few customers between here and that 6 mile stretch.
Yeah.
So that was, I'm sure, a difficult decision to make that investment, but I hope that's turned out already. It sounds like it has by the look on your face.
It has.
It has. You weren't frowning as you said you did a 6 mile stretch. You had a little smile there, so that's good. It turned out good. So it sounds like you made some infrastructure investments over the years. You've got some industry coming back. For someone, I guess, maybe on the more, I guess I'll call it the tourism aspect of things, when people come to visit, when people come through, maybe even a certain time of year, what would you want to make sure that someone saw and kind of took in Union Point?
Okay, well, over the years, it started 7, 8, 10 years ago. We used to have a festival of sorts, Union Junction Jamboree, and it was successful for many years, but we have started doing a few different things. We have a race that we run. It's like a 5K every year that we do, and we do that now. But the thing that I would really like to mention, and we are so excited about this, is the Firefly Trail.
I saw a big tank right across the railroad tracks from where we are.
Right.
It had that on there, and I was going to ask about that, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, that, since you've mentioned that, we had the art department from UGA. There were some art students that came down and painted the mural of the Firefly Trail on there.
And is that an old railroad bed? It's like one of those rails to trails, or is that something?
The old Georgia Railroad bed.
Okay.
I'm not being really accurate on how to describe. That is the old Georgia, and it was the Union Point to Athens branch.
Okay.
Georgia Railroad.
Well, that's neat.
But we're so excited.
Yeah.
And not only that, but that brings a lot of people into Union Point, hopefully, and more businesses will come.
If somebody rides, if they don't do what you said, and they start in Athens and ride to Union Point, but then they decide to ride around, what would you want to make sure they saw in and around town?
Our beautiful little town. If you ride through Union Point, because we have some places that are not real pretty, and we try to ask people to take care of their property and cut their grass, and I have not run today because of this interview with you, but I don't know how I'm going to get that in there with it going to be 100 degrees, but I usually run 3 miles every morning to keep my blood flowing. But you need to ride around and look at, we have some beautiful historic homes in Union Point, and a lot of people that take pride in their property. And I can remember as a little boy growing up, my grandmother and granddaddy, both of them, they worked in Union Manufacturing Company where I was talking about. They didn't have a blade of grass in their front yard, but they made sure that dirt was swept every day. And I can remember it being done with, I don't know what it was called, like brush brooms with sticks that were tied together. And my grandmama did not let anything, even if somebody walked across the yard and made a track, she wanted to
sweep it up,
sweep the track out. and that's the kind of pride. As I said before, this was like more or less a mill town.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the people were good, common, blue-collar, hard-working people. And were very good. They knew how to manage and knew how to budget their money. And that's something we don't see a lot of today. Is people, if they make $2, they can't spend $2 in a dime. They knew how to live within their means and have a little money put back.
Yeah. You mentioned that's, you're kind of talking about, I guess I'll call it traditional values and hometown pride and some of those things that small towns are known for. And I've been able to capture that in some of these interviews while we were setting up. And actually, you've mentioned a couple of your children even earlier in our interview here. You are very proud of your family. That's something I wanted to give you an opportunity to just kind of talk about. I got to meet your wife before we sat down here while I was setting up. So you made sure to bring her in and introduce her. That's just something that I think is just a small town thing. So I just want to give you the opportunity to talk about your family just for a minute.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to do that because I am a blessed person to have had parents and grandparents to raise me and teach me in a right Christian way, and we have tried to do that with our children, Jill and myself. We have three children that we are so proud of. Kimberly, our oldest daughter, she lives in Perry, Georgia, and she is a physician. She was blessed to marry a fine young man. His name is Dr. Terry Ham, and he is a physician. And they have four children, just wonderful grandchildren, Trey, Riley, Jill, Jack, and Rhodes, that we're really proud of. And then our youngest, middle child is Ralph Lanier Rhodes III, which we call Trey. And you said that you had met Trey at some capacity.
Up at the Capitol. You said he was your state representative. I said, I actually do remember meeting him. I don't know if he'd remember meeting me.
Well, he will. Yeah. He will, yeah. Mr. Mayor. But we're so proud of him for what he had. Trey is an investment representative with Piedmont Financial. They have three beautiful children, Olivia, Hallie Beth, and Ralph. But they call him Lane. I call him Ralph because he's the fourth. Our youngest son, John, he is with the Department of Natural Resources. He's in the Law Enforcement Division. And they have two children, Addie Grace, and I call him Jake, but he is named for his daddy, John Wesley Rhodes Jr. So we're very thankful to have wonderful children. We have nine grandchildren, as I've named.
And they keep you busy.
Oh, yes, sir.
I'm sure.
They really do.
Whatever the city doesn't keep you busy doing, your grandchildren keep you busy.
It's a full-time job.
Both of them, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, Mayor, as we start to wrap things up, I just want to give you the same opportunity I give to all my guests and let you talk directly to the Small Town Podcast audience and tell them why they should come pay a visit, or if they can find a house quick enough, come move to Union Point, Georgia.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Mayor. I've been calling you Mr. Mayor and the whole time, but you're so easy to get to know, and I feel like I've known you for years. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to try to talk a little bit about not only my life and what has happened, but what in Union Point has happened in Union Point. We have a wonderful community. I'm not saying that we don't have problems. We do. Everybody has issues, but what we try to do is address whatever comes our way, and we've had things come our way, but to address it and do what is right and to treat people the way that they should be treated, and put yourself in their shoes and like do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the golden rule. And Union Point is just a wonderful small town, as we've said before. Everyone knows each other and knows what everybody does. And we do have, I feel that Union Point is right at the doorstep of turning this little town around. And we're so excited for the many things that possibly are coming our way.
Well, Mayor Lanier Rhodes, thanks again for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Lanier Rhodes for talking with me. I also want to thank Mayor Pro Tem Jimmy Scott for talking with us about the Firefly Trail. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Ocilla, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.